Welcome back to the Motley Fool Radio Show. I'm David Gardner, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. Let me welcome, first of all, my phone sidekick, Diana Yoakum. Diana, welcome.
Thank you, David.
Our personal finance expert here at the Motley Fool. I hope your summer's going well.
It's going very well, thank you.
You look very good, although you don't have much sun.
I burn, David. That's all I do.
And so do I, so I don't have much sun either, but I think that's what our doctors tell us to do. We're taking your phone calls. Financial questions and comments always welcome here on the Motley Fool Radio Show. The phone number, 866-NPR-FOOL. Let's go to Boston. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind, sir?
Well, I recently got finished with graduate school, and I've got some debt from my college loans to pay off. I've got some savings, and I think it's about time I start getting into investing.
Well, we think it's... How old are you, sir?
I'm 27.
Okay, I agree with you. It is time, and it's a good time to get started investing. Let me ask you this. Fred, how much debt? Are you one of those guys who just went through 3 years of law school and you're $100,000 in the hole?
No, I got done with grad school, and luckily I was in the sciences, so the government paid for my PhD.
Doesn't sound like much luck, though. I think that was very conscious on your part, wasn't it?
Choosing science? Well, science chose me, you know.
I like that. You and I are aligned philosophically. By the way, what type of science?
I just got a PhD in biochemistry.
Okay, a wonderful subject. So how much debt are we talking about, and then savings, and let's get started investing.
Okay, well, my debt and my savings are just about equal at between $15,000 and $16,000.
All right.
Okay. So this is. Do you have any credit card debt?
I have no credit card debt.
Good for you. You are not the average 27-year-old, I have to say. Well, this is a, you know...
Actually, Dana, all of our listeners are better than average.
That is, and they're also all really good-looking.
That's true. and let it be noted that all American drivers are above average, because when you ask them, 70% of people say that they are above average drivers. So...
But anyway, let's get on the road here with this question. Before you start investing, Fred, I'm afraid we have a little bit of business to take care of. Let's talk about that loan. This is the question that all graduates have. When should they pay it off? You are lucky. You have the money to pay off that loan right now. But I might caution against doing so for several reasons. Consider not paying off your loan if you've locked in a low interest rate, if you've recently consolidated.
Which I believe occasions a question.
Mm-hmm. Have you? And what is? Do you know what the interest rate is?
The answer to both of those is yes. Mm-hmm. I just recently consolidated my student loans with the government, and as soon as that takes effect, which should be a matter of weeks, my interest rate will be 3.5.
That's great.
Yeah, I would make haste slowly to pay off
mm-hmm.
that debt.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, depending on your first job, your salary, you might actually even be able to deduct that interest from your taxes. So that's something to look into, and also a reason to go ahead and let that debt linger for a while longer. And also, if you've got other debts that are looming, that's another reason to maybe hold off on paying it down. But it sounds like that's probably the best course of action for you in managing your finances. Now, do you have a job lined up?
Well, right now I'm in the wonderful world of science as a postdoctoral fellow, and I've got a pretty meager salary, but I have a salary. It definitely covers my expenses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've started working already?
Yes, I have.
Good. And so you kind of have a sense of what your expenses are going to be.
Yes.
And hopefully can keep them under control. So then we're talking about $15,000 in savings, and you want to start making it work for your future, which is great. And now this is the fun part, the investing part. Do you have any retirement savings at all? I don't know if you were in the working world before you entered college or not, but have you got anything saved for your future?
No, not really, just what's in my savings account.
Interested in the stock market at all?
Very much so.
Want to be a player?
I should also say I've got pretty low risk tolerance.
Okay, and that's good to know. You know, what actually helps all of us think of the stock market as less risky is if we have lots of time. So, in fact, the longer the time you have, I would say if you have 10 or more years, which you do, it's risky not to be invested in the stock market over the course of your life, because you iron out the risk when you invest for the long term. And I think the people who take the greatest risks in the stock market are those who are investing for today.
Right.
Literally today. They're called day traders, and they're jumping in and out, and often they're borrowing money they don't have to establish certain positions, or they're hedging back against it. I think they're spending a lot of time that could be spent more productively in their lives and perhaps even more healthily. But the reality is that, Fred, you at the age of 27 absolutely should be in the stock market, and you should do it in your low and passive, low tolerance for risk and passive way, which is to invest in an index fund. And that just buys you the whole stock market, gets you about a 10% annual return. And some years are good and some are bad. But when you iron it all out, that's the place for your long-term money to be. And that's where you want to start with your first $1,000 that you can commit to your long-term savings.
Right. So speaking more about that, I've actually investigated a little bit. And, you know, everybody seems to advise me to go for the Vanguard 500 index fund, you know, which has a $3,000 minimum investment, and I can dig up that money.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a great way to go. I was just calling to maybe get your opinion on that and maybe compare it to some other funds out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, what you have to do is Vanguard, the S&P 500 index fund. We've always been a fan of Vanguard because of one thing in particular. That's the low fees that they charge for their passively managed mutual funds. And passively managed means something like an index fund, where it's a computer basically doling out the allotments, not someone who's picking and choosing stocks to buy and sell. What you have to do is do a side-by-side comparison of Vanguard's S&P 500 index fund to T. Rowe Price's S&P 500 index fund, all other companies that are offering that same product.
And the way to do that is to look at the expense ratio. Mm-hmm. On every company's website. All of these fund companies have websites today where you can look at Morningstar, other places where you can stack them up against each other. So whether you want to go to Morningstar or there are many other mutual fund marketplaces or just go to the sites themselves, you can see the expense ratio of each fund. And that's an annual fee that's essentially disappearing from your account passively to pay the funds. Fees.
So
we like that to be at 0.25% or mm-hmm. less. 0.25% or less for an index fund. 0.25 or less when we're talking expense ratio.
Well, this has been fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Fred.
Okay.
The phone number is 866 NPR Fool to Houston, Texas. We're headed. Jeanette, welcome to the Motley Fool Radio Show.
Thank you very much.
What's on your mind?
Well, on my mind, financial planning. I had a question about your view of the future of financial planners, that career. I was thinking how people these days seem to be very interested in digging up their own information, and also it seems that people don't have trouble finding financial planners who just don't seem to steer them in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really interested in your take on the future of the career of financial planning and where you think that's going, and mainly because I'm interested in getting into it, but
I was going to guess that. You know, I think that you're asking a question I wish more people would ask. First mm-hmm. of all, you're asking, what is this field like before I enter it? And you're also, in general, just asking about financial services and the advice that we get. A lot of us are getting advice, and some of it is quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is sometimes tainted by some conflict of interest we may not be aware of, but nevertheless can be good advice. And then some of it is just downright bad. And I think what we've always tried to look for at The Motley Fool are financial planners who are giving the good stuff. And what creates that in most cases, Diana, is the incentive
mm-hmm.
that they have when they sit down at the table with you and your finances.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. What attracts you to this field?
I think what attracts me the most is I'm very interested in having those answers. And I'm very attracted to the idea of being able to provide good, sensible information to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about my experience in high school where I graduated and never heard anything about financial planning, but knew enough about it because I would balance my mom's checkbook, things like that. So I think about those issues and feel that those are needs that are still out there. And I'm really interested in maybe just basic financial planning for real people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's not enough of that out there.
That's a great goal. And also, it sounds like you'll be a great financial planner. You are naturally curious about the process and about people and about helping them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, as far as making a career out of it, what's good for the customer isn't necessarily great for the employer.
Exactly.
And how your success is measured by, you know, the firm you work for is very different than how your customers measure your success. If you go and work for a big brokerage firm, which really dominates the field right now, that means
mm-hmm.
your primary job is to sell stocks, bonds, funds, insurance.
That is true. Robert Brokamp, who writes our Rule Your Retirement newsletter here at The Motley Fool, came from that field.
Mm-hmm.
And what he found out, he went in, I think, a little bit wet behind the ears, a little bit happy-go-lucky. He went to the first conference, and he was expecting to talk about financial planning and to learn a lot because he's a very intellectually curious fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, almost the entire conference was simply how to sell people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was his experience at that job for a few years, and that's why he left that job, because he didn't really feel like he was doing financial planning. He was just selling someone else's services to other people.
Right.
Exactly.
Now, salesmanship has to be part of the job, because no matter what kind of financial planner you become or who you work for, you do have to sell yourself. And Jeanette, the way you can differentiate the services that you offer versus what someone's going to find at a larger firm is to be very upfront about the way you make money. And, you know, at The Motley Fool, what we always tell people to ask of their financial service providers is, how do you get paid? How do you make your money?
Right.
Where does your paycheck come from? By providing the answer to that question, and we think the correct answer is, I get paid for the advice I give. I don't get paid for the products that I sell to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fee-only financial planner. That's a great answer, and it's a great marketing hook.
Great.
Jeanette, I have to say, when you do get your certification, when you're all ready to start, sounds like you're going to be the kind of financial planner that I'd like to work with.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I hope to be the one that I would want to work with, which is the one I'm looking for right now.
I think that that's a great thing to aspire to ask yourself, what's the kind of help that I would want to get, mm-hmm. the people that I know and love, and who would I trust? And again, find that marketing hook that's different from all of the other mm-hmm. planners out there.
Mm-hmm.
Be trustworthy and be honest upfront about everything. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jeanette.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. You know, we talk a lot about fee-only financial planners on mm-hmm. this show, Diana. You know, there are fee-based financial planners. To those of us who don't live and breathe this stuff on a daily basis, those phrases may sound a lot alike, but they couldn't be more different. Fee-only, what we like on the Motley Fool radio show, those are financial planners that you're just paying a fee to, a fee-only. Fee-based financial planners are often selling you whatever their firm has at the time for you to invest in, whatever makes mm-hmm. sense for you, but it's always going to be the firm's products, and they're usually getting a commission. So that's not a fee-only relationship. We prefer the fee-only financial
right.
planners.
There are grab bags of compensation plans, and oftentimes you'll run into advisors who take, you know, some from this column, some from that column, and kind of come up with the cost of their services mm-hmm. that way. Just know what you're getting into. Not to say that all commission-based financial planners are bad. There are some great ones out there.
That is absolutely
true. And
that's
just how they've chosen to get paid. But know that. Know it up front. Ask those questions before you enter into an agreement.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL. To the Middle West we're headed. Or maybe, I don't know, is Oklahoma City out west? Let's find out. Ralph, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I think we kind of can consider it southwest a little
southwest
bit.
That's what I'm going to go with then, because you live there. I've been there and I enjoyed my time there. It was a very, very hot night, but we had a great time there. Ralph, what's your question?
Well, in a retirement plan, my wife and I own shares of Sprint Corporation, and in a brokerage account we own shares of Nextel, and I saw in the Wall Street Journal, or I got notice or something, I can't recall what, that one is buying the other, and I don't remember which, whether Nextel's buying Sprint or Sprint is buying Nextel. But my question is, should I sell one or both, or just keep them both and wait for the merger to occur?
Great question. So it's effectively a question about whether or not you even want to be a part owner of this business,
right,
regardless of how it plays out. That's one part of the question. The other right. part of the question is, what do I do in a merger? Do I have to take action or not, and how does that work?
Exactly. And I have gains in both of the stocks. And maybe it's time to get out, although I'll have a taxable gain in one since it's in a brokerage account, and the other being in a retirement account, the gain won't be recognized yet.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, did you pick these stocks for your portfolio, or were they recommended by
a broker?
Oh,
no, I picked them years ago.
Okay.
Years ago.
And your reasons for doing so?
Well, with respect to Nextel, I picked it principally because I liked Craig McCaw, who started McCaw Communications and was involved in Nextel when it first started many, many years ago. And with respect to Sprint, I just thought I'd like to be in the wireless business a little bit with two companies, and I just picked those two.
Okay. Not bad choices, I would say.
Well, it worked out okay. I'd just like to know, should I keep them or unload now and move on to something else?
Okay, here's my thought. First of all, these companies are merging, and they're both very sizable companies. I mean, they're both about $40 billion. So it's a merger of equals in the telecommunications field. Nextel, of course, I associate with wireless. Sprint is a diversified telecommunications company. So what you're going to have is basically the same operation. It's just take both companies and smash them together into one. I'm sure there'll be some cost savings, like maybe you can take out some of the middle management, let's say, as one company merges with the other. There will be economies of scale, as they say. But for the most part, it's the same question that you had before, I think, which is, do you want to be an owner of what will then be an $80 billion company in effect, already a very large stock, a very well-known company in a relevant field? Both of these companies, as you mentioned, Ralph, have done well. You've profited from being a shareholder. My overall reaction is more along the lines of what would you do with the money instead than...
And really, I don't have a good answer to that question.
So I would probably let the merger happen. You don't have to take any action yourself when companies merge. In this case, what you end up with is just one stock. Your broker will handle all this. Sometimes with buyouts, you'll get some cash or stock, or sometimes there are decisions to make. But in this case, I think that if you just sit there and do nothing, it's all fine. And what it means is you're just going to have this big new company, and it's a stock that might not be as dynamic as the other two were, because the larger that market capitalization gets, the larger the giant, the harder it is to move or sprint. And
right.
So, no, pun not intended. Right. So, that's really your question. I mean, to me, whenever I look at very large companies, and even Google today, by the way, is $80 billion of market cap, about equivalent to these two companies combined. Right. I mean, any company that has a value of over $50 billion, I ask myself, you know, what are the chances that that might double or, let's say, quintuple in the decade ahead? And, you know, what you're saying is, could this be worth $250 billion one day? And when we get up in huge numbers like that, I often start looking other places to invest my money, because I feel as if it's easier for me to find something that might double in the next 3 years from smaller companies than from very large companies.
So in summation, permit the merger, don't do anything. Once I have the merged stock, make a decision whether I want to look at something more dynamic.
That's right. Good luck, sir, and congratulations on finding a couple winning stocks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that wraps up the Fool Phones for this week.
The Fool Phone lines are always open for your financial questions and comments. Diana, thank you again for your help.
Thanks, David.
866-NPR-FOOL is the number. Call us anytime this week. Let's talk.